In our practice, there's an important element of our practice which we normally just do and don't talk too much about, which is bowing. And I wanted to talk today about bowing and what that means and how to incorporate that into the way we bring practice into our life in a day-to-day sense. Formally, bowing is part of the ceremonial that we do, and there are different degrees of a bow that we can give. There's a full prostration, full bow, get down on the floor and actually bend ourselves all the way over, lift our hands above our heads, and stand up, the full bow, and all the way up to, in a sense, making gassho, is a kind of the most abbreviated form of bow. I think in some traditions, a full prostration actually ends up with you lying completely flat on the ground, and then standing up from that. We don't go that far. The formal bow, when we do a formal bow, a full bow, we're taught that one of the elements of the bow is this idea of lifting our hands above our head, and that is to signify that there is something above us. There is something beyond our experience or understanding. And specifically, when we're bowing in a ceremony, that thing is the Buddha mind, Buddha nature. And that thing is beyond our present experience. This idea of a thing beyond our present experience is a tricky one and something that we need to be careful about, but also that we want to kind of examine and look at and see how that can fit within our own kind of life. From my point of view, when people come to practice, when I came to practice, and when other people that I know have come to practice, we've come looking for something. We've come looking for an answer to a question that we have. We've come looking for a different way of living. We've come looking for something deeper. We've come looking for a way of expressing something that we feel within ourselves. And in that sense, we have come because we don't know something. We've come because there's something that we feel we want to add to our life. There's something beyond our present experience that we're looking for. And to have that kind of humility, because that's what we're giving expression to there, is humility, is deeply important within practice, within the spiritual life, within any tradition, really, of spiritual practice. That kind of humility. Now, the problem with humility is that we think that if we approach the idea of humility, we think, I must be unworthy in some sense. This is our norm. This is the kind of normal way of thinking about humility. I must be lower than. There must be some inadequacy about me. There must be some lack about me. And this is not what we're talking about when we're talking about bowing and when we're talking about humility. When we're bowing in terms of Buddhism, in terms of practice, in terms of the true nature of bowing, we're giving expression to our deepest adequacy. Because what we're doing is saying, there is something in me which is willing to be wrong and willing to be right, but willing to learn something, willing to be in the place of not knowing with confidence, learning to be in the place of having a boggled mind, but to be in that place with confidence. The confidence that there is something to know, there is something that we have the adequacy to come to know. I remember when I was first learning how to practice. I had a friend who was Jewish, and she would come to practice with me some, and she had a real difficult time with the idea of bowing, about kind of bowing down to idols and all that kind of stuff. And so deeply ingrained in our sort of Abrahamic view of the world is this kind of idea, and actually not even Abrahamic, but the whole kind of feudal notion of how human beings work together, paying homage to someone higher than you, putting yourself really at the mercy of someone else or something else. That idea of bowing is not what we're getting at in terms of practice, in terms of Buddhism. What we're doing is saying, I am bowing to Buddha nature and recognizing that that thing is benign and benevolent and is beyond my present understanding, and being willing to let go into that. The whole issue of equality as it's understood in America, this is a little bit of a side issue, but I think it's important to talk about. In a sense, the issue of equality as it's thought about, as it's idealized in America, doesn't quite go far enough, isn't quite an accurate view of the nature of the reality of life. We say that everybody is equal under the law, and we say that everybody has equal rights or whatever. And this is a nice ideal, but the fact of the matter is everybody isn't actually equal. Everybody doesn't have the same capacity, the same ability to understand things, the same fortune. Some people are rich, some people are poor. Everybody isn't equal in that way. And yet, there is a truth to the idea that we are equal. We all have Buddha nature. We are all the same in that regard. We are all exactly the same. And there's still the practical reality of higher and lower and different positions in different skills, all of that kind of thing. In terms of practice, we need to be able to look at all of that with clear and open eyes and to see what's really going on there, and to see and to accept our position as it is. For me, there's always been this kind of struggle, who's smarter than me? It's embarrassing to say, but there it is. Who's smarter than me? And I have like one former friend, well, I think he's still I think of him still a friend, but I don't think he thinks that I'm a friend, who I would always be in competition with in high school. And because of this question, who's smarter? I think he was actually smarter than me, but I was just more aggressive at arguing. And I really put him off. I was really kind of offensive to him, much to my chagrin and shame. And in thinking about it, I realized that I was unable to accept our basic equality, to live in our basic equality, and acknowledge that he was actually smarter than me, and accept that, and just live at peace with that, and not be able to, and not be comfortable in that position with someone being smarter than me. And so I've been working on that over the years, allowing that to kind of, you know, come into my view and look at it. It's still kind of uncomfortable, but yeah, there are people who are smarter than you. We need to, in that sense, we need to look at carefully at ourselves and look at what we're holding on to about ourselves, and to accept that there are people who know more than we do or who know less than we do, and be able to take responsibility for that, but not see it as a means of asserting a self, not see it as a means of either being submissive to someone in a negative sense or aggressive to someone in a kind of overpowering sense. Just see, oh, there's a difference here, and accept that thing. There is a reality in practice, an issue in practice, where sometimes people will say, oh, the monks think they're spiritually superior to us lay people. And some people have a lot of difficulty with that position, partly due to, I think, the Western kind of karma of monastic practice in Europe and the whole kind of Reformation and all that stuff, Catholicism and all that stuff, the negative parts of that, whole Protestant movement in this country, priests and the whole thing. But there is a place where monks and lay people are completely equal. We have Buddha nature, we have the potential for training. As I've said many times, I've met lay people who are practicing in our tradition who know the Dharma more deeply than I do. And I can see that in them. And I bow to them for that. I say, you know more than I do about practice. And I had this conversation with somebody this summer where it's like when I talk to this guy, I just know this person knows more than I do about practice. And we were at the conference, at the conclave, and he was asking me about something, and I had to say, he came to me and he asked me, how do I give, speak up in these things like you do, something like that. And I thought about it for a minute. I thought, well, the thing is, and we talked about this, I said, the thing is, you actually need to let go of this, it would behoove you to consider letting go of this, I'm below these people attitude of mind, which you're giving expression to when you speak. Because you know more about the Dharma than I do. And when you speak, you're trying to cover that up. You're trying to say, oh, I'm... He's Canadian, that's part of it too. But I'm not so good, but what about this? And kind of muddies his message. And he was sort of like, oh, don't say that. Don't say that I know more than you do. But he said, okay, yeah, that was right. On target, I'll do that. Not that he's saying, I know more than you do, but he's saying, what you have to offer is more. So, and the reason I'm bringing this up is not to call attention to my virtue or to his virtue, but to say there is a place within practice where you go to a monk for teaching, to take your issue and say, what about this issue? And the monk, who is trained to be a teacher, says, oh, well, maybe look at this part of what you're doing. And maybe that's not true, but maybe it is. You see what I'm saying? So there's this kind of mutual bowing going on, where he's saying, okay, well, I bow to you because you got the training, the robes, you're the teacher. I'll see what you have to say and see how that helps me. And I'm bowing to him saying, well, I respectfully say, you know more about the Dharma than I do, but how about this? You see what I'm getting at? So there's this kind of complex weave of interaction that goes on. And this is daily life, in a nutshell, kind of even out in the world, how we interact with each other respectfully. Okay, so the whole thing about equality, inequality, is a very kind of subtle and complicated kind of area of training. It's something we need to just be aware of and look at and accept. Part of bowing is saying, okay, there's this thing higher than me. But part of bowing is also the expression of accepting things as they are, bowing to things as they are. So, and bowing to things as they are is also accepting that Buddha nature permeates everything. No matter what kind of conditions we find ourselves in, we can bow to them. We can say, okay, somewhere in here is Buddha nature, and I will bow to that and accept this situation and see how to train. And again, we're bowing to that, to the situation, from the point of view of spiritual adequacy. I have Buddha nature. I am complete, just as I am, even though this situation seems to be beyond my ability and understanding. I heard an interview once with a famous baseball player, Roy Campanella. He was a catcher, I think for the Yankees, but I'm not sure who he played for. In the 50s and 60s, he was one of the first really great black baseball players. And early in his career, he was one of the greatest catchers, I think, in baseball. Early in his career, he was like 25 or 26, something like that, maybe a little older. He got into a car accident and lost the use of his legs. So this is why nobody knows about him. Not many people know about him. And he was, he was a really great baseball catcher. Right in the middle of his career, he gets in a car accident. He can no longer use, no longer has the use of his legs. Obviously, his baseball career has ended. So I hear an interview with him sometime later. I think it was, the interview was in the 80s or something like that. And he's in a wheelchair, and he's doing stuff socially, and you know, he's got kind of programs going on and all this stuff. And the viewer's kind of talking to him and you know, ask him something, and he says something like, I have this mantra, and it is, I accept this chair. I accept this chair. I accept this chair. Basically, what he is giving expression to, this is deeply impressive to me, because basically he's taken his life from what must have been kind of profound disappointment, profound, you know, kind of grief, and converted it through acceptance, through bowing. He said, okay, I accept this chair. I bow to this situation. Here is my teacher for the moment. These conditions are my teacher. And he's doing all kinds of good for people. He's got foundations, he's helping kids, he's doing all this stuff. So when I find myself in difficult circumstances, which I don't particularly like and don't particularly kind of understand how to deal with, I have this little thing that comes up. I accept this chair. I accept this chair. I accept this chair. And think about Roy Campanella, you know, as he goes through his life in that situation. And that really is, in a sense, the quality of bowing that I want to kind of point at and underline. That ability to just say, again, from this point of view of adequacy, because think about the adequacy that it takes to be able to kind of take your life in hand, completely shifted, completely changed, and say, okay, what's the next step? How do I positively accept the situation and make the most of it? That, to me, is what adequacy is about. No matter what the kind of failure is, watching Tavis Smiley the last couple of nights, and he's got a book out called Failing Up, 20 examples of failure that have helped me in my career. He goes through different failings that he's had and how he's kind of transformed those failures into a positive experience, a better understanding of his life. And again, this is an example of what we mean by bowing. So it has these dual characteristics. When we make gassho, when we bow to our seat, we're saying, you know, thank you to the Buddha nature within our cushion and seat for holding us up during meditation. And when we turn around and bow to the room, we're saying thank you to the community of people practicing here for allowing me to practice with you. So there's that quality of seeing Buddha nature in things and giving expression to gratitude and appreciation. There is this higher thing. There is Buddha nature. And we can be grateful for that, because think of the thing where you're thinking, I am so great. I know what the truth is. I know what's right. And what the implications of that are. I mean, if you think about it for a minute, when you take that position, and we take that position in varying degrees of subtlety, you're basically kind of saying, I know what's best for the world as well as for myself. Isn't that a little bit arrogant? I mean, obviously you would think that it is, but when we take that position, we can consider that. So isn't it great that we can say, okay, well, there is something greater. I don't really know what that thing is. I can't really define it. I can't really even in one sense say that it really exists, except that I have this kind of feeling, well, maybe it does. And we can say, okay, well, maybe it does, so I'll say thanks to that. And be, in a sense, relieved of that position of arrogance. So on the one hand, there is that quality of bowing, and then there's the quality of acceptance. And acceptance, we're able to accept circumstances from the position of adequacy because of the nature of the Buddha nature. Because at heart, we have Buddha nature within ourselves. And when we can come to life with that quality of bowing, with that quality of acceptance, then we're giving expression to Buddha nature. We don't have to be better than anything else. We don't have to be inferior to anything else. We just accept conditions as they are. Accept conditions from where we are. And trust that we'll be able to learn from them. In a way, life is constantly, I thought about this talk and I thought I would call it bowing in the kaleidoscope of life. Because life is constantly giving us different aspects of complexity and challenge. It's a constantly shifting circumstance. And bowing is something that we could take into every one of those circumstances. Okay, here's a different circumstance. I accept this chair, how do I handle it? How do I call? What can I do with it? So that's what I have to say about bowing today.
A question, if you wouldn't mind speaking to you. You were talking about equality in not necessarily a religious sense, but maybe just in a work sense or any sense. If there's some person that you're trying to communicate with and it's pretty clear that you know what's going on better than this person might. Maybe you're a carpenter, and you know how to decide how to do the pitch of the roof, for example. And I know how to do it, and pretty sure this person doesn't. How do you approach that without being patronizing, condescending? Is it in my understanding? It's that being willing to say, well, maybe I don't know anything about this, and perhaps in this conversation new things will come to light which will be helpful, beneficial to the overall project, but also not be condescending or patronizing.
Yeah, it's a good question. It goes to the development of what we call skill and means, and how to communicate with people and how to deal with people. A lot of it is letting go of our self-interest in the circumstance and letting go and understanding what our own egotistical needs are with our knowledge, and being willing to present our knowledge in a way which is devoid of that, has let go of. I mean, when you're patronizing, what is that? It doesn't really have to do with the information. It has to do with what you want to assert in the situation, which is, you know, superiority or whatever. And so the more we can be clear about our own kind of tendencies and our own wishes and what we desire from a circumstance, the more we can let go of those things and just make an offering of information. Now, training ourselves, part of the deal about training ourselves is just being willing to go forward and make mistakes, to be willing to not know how to do something and to just try. So when you're in a situation, say you are building something and you know how to do the roof pitch and you make the offering, and you have included some patronizing quality in it. And the person that you make the offering to picks up on that and responds to that in a negative way, and so there's a conflict that arises. Well, then you can kind of step back and say, okay, well, what was going on there? And then take steps to address that. You can say, gosh, you know, I'm sorry I was patronizing about that. That was really uncalled for, or something. And then learn more about yourself and learn how to restrain that quality.
There's a technique that I've learned just for that situation. You preface your information with, I could be wrong, I often am, but... and then you explain your position.
Yeah, there's all...
It's not offensive to the other person.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And there are all kinds of little techniques like that. Part of it is having a sense for who is actually kind of what the chain of command is, who's responsible for the situation. And then knowing who's responsible, you can make the offering of information in the way that John has said here. And yeah, yes.
That kind of reminded me of an idea I have about bowing, which is I think of myself or my idea about myself kind of by bowing, you kind of drop below the radar a little bit. And so I think since condescension or things that cause conflict can sometimes just come from me, you, we're different, you want this and I want this, and when I bow, sometimes I imagine by my head and my body dropping lower that I can actually flow more with the rest of the world because I'm not trying to be different or stick out.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It reminds me of a quality of bowing which I didn't talk about in detail, which is that when we bow, we're actually letting go of self. We're just kind of saying, okay, I give up self. And that's partly what this offering part of it is. And in letting go of self, then we can see what true equality is. We can see there isn't, you know, part of making Gesho is Buddha nature in me recognizes Buddha nature in you, even if there's conflict or self between us. And so, yeah, when we... it's kind of a physical expression of just what Marianne's talking about, just letting go of self. So bowing in this situation also goes to your question, David, how to skillfully work with people. You know, you can kind of mentally kind of bow and say, okay, I'll just let go of self here and see what happens. There was something else I was trying to pull, some little thread about that I was trying to pull out. So let me just think. Oh, I was just going to tell a little story about, I was working as a head baker in a delicatessen in Portland, and we were trying to work out how to incorporate a night shift incorporate moving from the night shift to the day shift to a more day shift and make this work. And so I came up with this idea of how to do that. And I suggested it to my boss. And he was like, oh, no, that's over. Okay, fine. And then, like, a week later, he comes back to me with the same idea. I've got this idea. What about if we do this? And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. I said, oh, that's a great idea, Scott. Well, we'll just go ahead and do that. And the thing was, you know, I'm thinking, that was my idea. And I could have said, oh, that was my idea. But really, you know, he's the boss, and it doesn't matter. The idea, you know, is out there, and we can make it work. So it really requires us to just let go, again, of our own self-investment in it. And, you know, those kind of techniques that we kind of mentioned before, that's really a way to kind of skillfully work with ourselves with regard to that as well. You know, I could be wrong, and I have been before, is a kind of way of reminding ourselves of humility, kind of saying, okay, well, let's kind of get our own kind of self in order here so that we can present this information. And we're kind of communicating both to the other person as well as to our own self, because sometimes it can be difficult to let go of our investment in whatever reward we think we're going to get from knowing the right thing.
Well, I just was noticing last week I was getting, allowing myself to get upset and be attached to certain things. And then when I just decided that, why am I doing this to myself? And I was expecting a certain outcome. And then when I just said, you know, I'm just going to let that go, it was like it went away. But I was just holding on to, you know, in this situation, the outcome really didn't matter. I was making a big deal of how I wanted a certain situation to turn out. And it was like I was not in control of that. And I was trying to be. I wanted to be. I couldn't. It's like this person didn't do what I expected them to do. And I was like, you know, and granted, I'm not building anything where the outcome maybe is important, but in those things that just for me on a smaller scale, maybe if the outcome truly is not, you know, does it really matter 6 months from now, a year from now, 10, you know, that kind of thing. And it was so, I was so relieved just to let it go. And I was like, man. And then I could look back and go, I was in such turmoil about these expectations of my friend. And then when I thought, you know what, I'm not going to, Alan, I'm talking about Carl. And then I thought, you know, I'm just going to let that go. Our friendship is more important than, well, he's not doing, you know, what he said he would do. And he's not, you know, he's not even allowing me. He's not even listening to me. And I just thought, I'm going to let it go. And it was just a relief, a burden off of me. But it was that outcome that I was hanging on to and me trying to be in control of all that. And I'm constantly fighting that. It's like,
yeah.
I'm not doing what I want them to do. And I'm sure that is very frustrating when people deal with me and I'm not doing what they want.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably some good karmic reasons for you to be that way, and you have to kind of respect that and be willing to bow to that in a sense and know that that's part of who you are and be willing to train with that. And also really to make a point of kind of saying to yourself, see how it worked here? This is better if I let this go. It is profound how much of our ideals we can let go. In my experience, I know that I can literally let go of my whole mind and go forward with integrity. Every one of my values I can let go of and go forward with integrity in terms of practice. And I'm not recommending that people do that, but I know that I can see that that is possible within practice, and I know that it is something that I've done. I'm not recommending that people do that, and so it is. What I'm trying to say is, even if the outcome is critical, we can still go into it with the mind of letting go, and the mind of not insisting, the mind of bowing. And trust that what is true will actually kind of be asserted or will come through eventually. Sometimes it doesn't, and we have to be willing to accept the consequences of that. But if we kind of stick with it, then what is true will be expressed. Now, also, if we go into a thing with the mind of bowing, the mind of being willing to let go of our selfish insistence on the way things turn out, if we go into that with the mind of bowing, with the mind of being willing to let go of self, then oftentimes we can see a skillful way, once we've made the effort to bow, if a thing needs to be presented or pursued, if it would be good for a thing to be presented or pursued, then we can often see the way to go forward with that. If you see what I'm getting at. So it's not just that we're kind of trying to roll over and just do what everybody wants us to do. it's more, how can I go forward in harmony and truth? How can I go forward with what is deeply true and really follow that? And sometimes you need to be quite assertive about what is true. And if we can do that from the mind of bowing, then it's more likely that we'll have a harmonious outcome.
Something that's been helping me lately, it's kind of weird, but I've been watching a television series about the planets, and other planets are so weird. They're so far away and they're so huge. They think maybe the mountains of Venus have this frozen metal on top that makes them reflective, like their rain is metallic, or that volcanoes on other planets like Neptune or other planets like that might shoot up liquid nitrogen instead of rock. And it just makes a lot of my, it gives me comfort, because a lot of the little things that I get worked up about, even compared to something on our planet, very, very small, but then if you think about other planets, it's really, really small. And I don't really have trouble with thinking, oh, well, this is so small, it doesn't matter at all. But I do get over-involved in certain matters, and seeing a computer animation of a volcano erupting on another planet really helps me.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Kuo Zhenji used to say, or there's a quote in Soto Zen where he says, if we can let go of something as small as itself, we can gain the universe. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And then my teacher used to say, it's like you're walking along the beach, and there's this kind of beautiful sunset, and the ocean's kind of coming in, but you have a rock in your shoe. And the thing that you're thinking about as you're walking along the beach is the rock in your shoe. It's just a tiny rock, but it hurts. And so you're just walking along, and you're missing this whole kind of beautiful thing because you have this rock in your shoe, and you haven't been able to be willing to just stop and take the rock out. And that's what holding onto the self is like, just allowing that rock to be there. But it's just as you say, we get so kind of enmeshed in that thing, and it's just so invested in it, so important to us. And, you know, for karmic reasons, I'm sure it's significant that that is true. But it's really quite a small thing. We can just take off our shoe, drop the rock out, put our shoe back in it, and enjoy life. So any kind of, Reverend Master G used to say, the truth, the whole truth, and anything that works. You know, if it's a computer animation of a volcano erupting, go for it. whatever helps you. It's just really great. All right, then. Satisfactory?
Yeah.
Thank you.